Accession number 26562, Mr. Ken Taylor, Reel 6. We were talking about when the Formidable finally reached the Mediterranean. Yeah. You're not sure of the month, we'll have to look that up later. But you were based at Alexandria.
Alexandria with the Eastern Mediterranean Fleet. Commander-in-Chief was Admiral of the Fleet, Cunningham. I can never remember the initials because there was a couple of Cunninghams, weren't there?
No, he
was in the Warspite. HMS Warspite, the battleship.
Do you remember the composition of the fleet?
Not all of it, no.
Tell us what it was like. What were your first impressions of Alexandria then?
Oh, I loved Alexandria. Loved it.
Why? Tell us about it.
Oh, well, I suppose there was everything there. When you went ashore, you had to go through the Arab quarters to get into the main town. And, of course, there's the renowned Sister Street in the Arab quarters where the brothels were. And something that sticks out in my mind was walking down there. Oh, and we were warned by older sailors to take your cap off and hold it in your hand, because the trick of the girls was to run out of the house, grab your cap, throw it inside. And then when you went in after it, you were jumped on. So you carried your hat through the Arab quarter. And I remember, sticks out in my mind as long as I live, walking down Sister Street and coming out of a top window of a building, I heard this voice, very high falsetto voice, saying, "I love you, Chief. 10 piastres, please. Next." And it sticks in my mind as a boy. That's fantastic. But then when you got into Alexandria itself, it was a beautiful city. A beautiful city. And cause there was, in those days, it was King Farouk. Right by King Farouk's palace, it was a nice zoo. We used to go there because of the park and the zoo. A very nice shop, cinema, and quite a lot to do there. And you know, it was very. And they had a beach nearby, Stanley Beach. You know, so you go swimming on Stanley Beach.
What was that like?
Very nice. And of course, Alexandria then was a cosmopolitan place. There were lots of Germans, French, Greeks, you know, some people that have been living there for years. The one thing that sticks out in my mind is I was a boy, so my leave expired at 6:30 at night, which rankled with me because I was doing a man's job, but I had to go back aboard the ship at 6:30. But what I used to do was to sneak ashore, and I used to put a rope over from the forecastle to the which led down to the horse pipe where the big cable went to the shore where the ship was moored. And I could sneak back up there, climb back up there. And the funny thing was, and I always remember this, I went to the cinema to see the Mark of Zorro. That was the original Mark of Zorro. And of course, we were sat in the gods, very steep, sort of up in the gods. And I say, my pal was a one-badge telegraphist, in other words, a much older man. In actual fact, he taught me a lot of that. You know, he was very good at keep a neat log, do this, do that, in the wireless office. You know, he was very good. In those days, you used to call your sea daddy. You know. And we were sat there in the cinema, and I suddenly realised, sat immediately behind me, because he pushed his knees into my back and my shoulders, was the PTI who was in charge of the boys' mess deck with a couple of his pals, you see. And I thought, oh, I've had it, because it had gone 6:30, I should have been back aboard at this time. So, anyway, this is what I liked about the sort of naval justice. Back aboard the ship, before 9:00 every night, the officer of the watch or the officer of the day used to do rounds all around the ship, come round and see the ship was tidy and clean and everything else and tidied up. And because I was a watch keeper, every time he came in, the instructor used to come to the boys' mess deck, he'd say, "You go and clean the edges, you clean the bathroom, you two do the tidy up the hammock netting, you do this, you do that." And I say, "Just got to go down the office, POC," because I thought I can get out of this, you see. First night back aboard after my night in the cinema, the PTI comes up to me and he said, "Enjoy the cinema last night?" And so, all embarrassed, I said, "Yes, PO." He said, "I think you can clean the heads for the following week," he said. So, didn't put me on a charge, didn't have a black mark on my record, but, you know, pointed out the discipline, put me in my place, which I always appreciated. I saw him many, many years later in Portsmouth, and he retired, long men, had a chat with him, never forgot him. So that was Alexandra, and I say it was a very nice run ashore. We used to regularly go to sea, a very large fleet, because I remember we had the Warspite, was the commander-in-chief ship, we had the Valiant. I'm just trying to think, there's another battleship, there's about three battleships.
They can look it up, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Were you on operations with them?
On patrol out all the time. I mean, we've got constant air attacks. I mean, the most devastating weapon those Germans had were the Stukas.
Well, tell us about that. What do you as you saw a Stuka attack on the ship?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they used to come over, and I mean, I sometimes watch these American war films, and they say they're dive bombing, and they're coming in at about a 45 degree angle. These Stukas were virtually vertical, almost 90 degrees, not quite. I mean, the Formidable, I mean, she had a terrific armament. She had 6-8 barrel pom-poms, 8 twin 4.5-inch turrets, which were AK or surface, so could put up a terrific barrage, like all the other ships. But it was sometime during this time that I suppose because of the lot, with all these constant attacks, you see, if you were watchkeeping, just when you're going off watch to have a sleep, you get an air attack. So you had to go to your action station. Now, depending on whether you, what they call the next watch on, the last watch off, or opposite watch, depended on where you went. So you had a routine. Number one transmitting station, number two transmitting station, main wireless office, remote control office. So you all had to go to a different place. This was obviously, you know, for any damage, then you've got your operators all spread around. So, you know, sleep was very limited at times, and I remember getting the most terrible headache. I nearly passed out. I had the most blinding headache I've ever had in my life. And they sent me up to the sick bay, and they put me in a bunk, and the bunk was the top bunk, and it was just below the deck, and immediately above that was one of these pom-poms. So every time an air attack came, all I could hear was a thump, 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 thump. But anyway, that was at one short period. And the funny thing,
did the headaches go away? I mean, yeah.
After a rest, I think, in the bed, like in the bunk, for a few days. I was only there a few days. But one of the humorous things were, of course, then, I mean, when you talked earlier about the food, you know, became less, shall we say, varied because of the rations you could get. I mean, I always remember the wheat from Egypt was always full of weevils. So when you had your bread, it looked like current bread. There was all these dead weevils in it, you know.
Did that put you off?
Well, at first off, you started picking out, and then you found out this was a waste of time picking them out. And some of the old sailors says, there's a lot of goodness in weevils. You eat them, lad. Like they were dead, so they'd been baked. Potatoes sort of run out, and you get a lot of rice, you know, in lieu of potatoes, that sort of thing. And a funny thing was, when I was in the sick bay, we had a surgeon captain, and I think he must have come from Harley Street or somewhere like that, and you know, got called up for the war. And this old sailor had gone in there for some reason or other. And I heard this surgeon captain say to him, now he said, I want you to have a nice diet, he said, a nice piece of fish every day, and this and that. He was giving him something as if he was talking to someone in Harley Street. And all the sailors outside were laughing their heads off of this. Anyway, I was only in there a couple of days, you know, saw the rest of me. As I say, we had constant air attacks when you're at sea.
And then, did they ever hit the ship?
Not at this time, no. We come up to a point when...
What was your action station then? When
as I say, when you're on watch, you're on watch. Last watch on, you go to one place. Next watch on, you go to another. Opposite watch, you go.
I missed that.
Yeah, it was all laid down, as you know, so you knew exactly where to go. And then they had an aircraft spotted the Italian fleet, and the observer, a Lieutenant Ben Bolt, sent the enemy report, and I was on watch I wasn't on DF watch, and I was in the remote control office because, you know, got, I mean, if they didn't need the DF for obvious reasons on the Med Fleet at that time, we didn't need the DF in because we had other ships. And I remember he sent the most perfect enemy report, absolutely as perfectly laid down in the book. And this reported the Italian fleet. Now, that lieutenant, funny enough, years later, was the captain of the Theseus when I was on there, and he's the worst captain I ever served under. He was a brilliant observer as a lieutenant, but as a captain, he's the worst one I ever served under. Every other captain I ever had was always good captain, but he was the worst one I ever served under. He gave a lot of favouritism to the fleet.
We'll sort of come back to that. So you got this message. So what happened?
CNC decided to intercept the Italian fleet at night because we were always very good at night actions. And so, because it was a large fleet, you had three battleships, a carrier, there was cruisers, a couple of destroyer screens around. So we had a large fleet. Anyway, we were steaming along at night, and the Italians came through the outer destroyer screen. They didn't even see them. They didn't even pick them up. And, of course, this was reported by wireless. And I always remember there was three battleships here. The carrier, battleship. And this battleship couldn't fire because our carrier was in the way. So the other two battleships opened fire. And, the results are known. I can't remember the results now. They sunk some...
Is this the Battle of Matapan?
Matapan, yeah. The Battle of Matapan sunk some shit. And then the commander-in-chief withdrew the fleet because, you know...
Now, what do you remember of the Battle of Matapan? Where were you and what do you remember of it? Or would you just be in your wireless office?
I was in the wireless. I can't remember which wireless I was in there, but I was on watch at the time. But, you know, all you did was the gunfire and that sort of thing because you're on watch. And he withdrew the fleet and some of the destroyers went in, you know, with torpedo attacks and that sort of thing. And as we turned away, we could hear the Italians firing amongst themselves. They were firing at one another.
Did you realise what a success? It was quite a success, that.
Oh, yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you realise at the time it was...
They tell you what they suspect they've got, and sort of sunk this and, you know, injured that and that sort of thing. Then the next thing, as opposed to the normal sort of air attacks, that sort of thing, I can remember at one time coming back into Alexandria and Italian frogmen put charges. I think it was the Valiant. They put charges on the bottom and. She sat on the bottom, actually. She went straight down and just sank on the bottom. So the upper decks from the bridge were above the water. It was a very successful attack. I know they got the Valiant. They might have got something else.
And did you actually see the charges go off?
No. Didn't see. It just happened, and we saw the damage afterwards.
Were you very aware of the threat from frogmen after that? I mean, were there any precautions to take?
The interesting thing was whenever we were in harbour, we used to get a couple of destroyers tied up either side of us because, you know, they have limited facilities for not baking bread. I mean, they go on hardtack biscuits after the fresh bread runs out. And they can come aboard and use your bathrooms and showers and that sort of thing. But, of course, the other thing, they were a torpedo shield for the carrier because they were tied up alongside. And if anybody fired torpedoes at the carrier, they'd hit the destroyers first. Because we had few carriers in, they were needed. The next thing, basic major thing, was the evacuation of Crete. I remember the commander-in-chief said, we will not let the army down. If I lose every ship in my fleet, he said, we will not let the army down. And I think we lost about 50% of the Eastern Mediterranean fleet. And that old friend of mine, Mouldy Payne, his brother was on a cruiser and someone came down and said to him, I've just seen your brother's ship turn turtle. You know, there was a shock for him. And that's when we got hit.
What, do you remember anything before you got hit about the operations? I mean, what was happening? Or was it just, for you, it's routine.
Indoors, inside on the radio and that sort of thing, yeah. Except when you're off watching, you can, yeah. But I mean, when you're in action, I mean, you're at your action stations anyway, which is all undercover. But I mean, the one of our operators, we used to call him Panda because he was a big fella and thinning a bit on top. He used to have fairly close-cropped hair, but he was very hairy all over. Panda Isle, if he come from up Nottingham way somewhere, Midlands, Nottingham way somewhere, and he'd been a telegraphist on newspapers. And they sent him ashore. They sent from different
Crete.
At Crete, yeah. With more or less with a radio and other people, you know, there was other people, but they were in little groups, so they could signal back to the ship, saying where the army, you know, what beaches they were making for, where they were going. And I always remember he came back thrilled to bits because they used to have to sort of get batteries out of, you know, wrecked trucks and that sort of thing to keep the radio going, that sort of thing. And they're constantly under fire, and he thought it was absolutely marvellous. He didn't want to come back to the Navy. He said he thought it was wonderful being a soldier. Amazing, isn't it? We got a £1,000 bomb.
Tell us what happened. What do you remember of that raid?
Well, I know that because I was up in the remote control office up on the island on the manoeuvring waves. And all I remember was I heard this bang. And the ship just lifted and went down again, just, you know, as if she did a bump. And what happened, the £1,000 bomb hit just forward of the forward lift well. It went through six decks and exploded on the seventh. And blew a big hole out of each side of the ship forward. And the boys' mess deck was a complete wreck. So if I hadn't have been on watch, I would have, you know, or at action stations or anywhere else. Most of our kit was gone, that sort of thing, personal effects. After that, they moved the boys into various adult messes, so I moved on to the normal communications mess deck after that. But the thing was, that if that had come back, because between the lift wells there was a 4-inch armoured deck, so it could have caused more operational damage, really. Hitting just forward where it wasn't an armoured deck, going right through and blowing out the side, it didn't sort of cause any operational damage. Now, another bomb, I think it was a £500 bomb, went through one of the, I think it was the starboard after gun, one of the starboard after gun, 4.5-inch gun turrets. It went right through and exploded in the water, and the blast wiped out the gun crew, I think were Marines. And a third bomb was a near miss, which exploded in the water by one of the propellers, and that caused more operational damage because it cracked the propeller shaft, and we were taking in water quite fast. And I remember, even though that they were pumping out rapidly, but the water, you know, I think was coming in fast, and they were pumping it out to a degree, and we steamed back at quite a fast speed back to Alexandra, and they tied us up against alongside the coaling jetty, you know, so that we were firmly tied up. And of course, then we had to do temporary, you know, the ship's crew had to put plates on the outside to make her seaworthy to go to the safe. But as I say, the damage to the propeller shaft was the most serious operationally. But the one thing I'll never remember there was the I'm trying to think of the ship, Cruiser. She was at the Battle of the Plate, River Plate. I think it was the Ajax. She was loaded with troops coming back from Crete and was continually dive bombed night and day all the way back. And there were so many dead on there, it was unbelievable because they couldn't man the guns half the time. And when they got into Alexandria Harbour, the Egyptians refused to go on board the Egyptian dockyard workers. So they had to get volunteers from all the ships to go on board, taking the bodies off.
Did you volunteer?
I volunteered, but it turned down, because I suppose because I was too young. But All the way down through the Red Sea, she was burying bodies at sea. All the way down around the Cape, she was burying. They reckoned they were still burying them at sea going across the Atlantic. And when they got the States, the Yanks wouldn't go on board till they got all the bodies. It was terrible, the carnage on there.
And that was the Ajax, I think, not the Exeter?
No, I think it was the Ajax. Pretty sure it was the Ajax.
So you're in harbour and you're having temporary repairs. Did that take long?
Must have taken a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not quite sure. I've got pictures of the damage, but the main idea was to put plates on the outside, you know, to make her seaworthy. And then we went to the States. We went down through, back down through the way we came, through the Suez Canal, Red Sea. That time we called it Durban on the way. Over to Jamaica, where we unloaded the aircraft and the torpedoes and that, so they could be used for other ships calling. And then we went up to Norfolk, Virginia, and the Illustrious was in dock there. She was still being repaired. She was bad because she was twisted. Apart from all the normal damage, the whole, so we say the backbone of the ship was twisted, as if you got a candle and twisted it. So quite a major job. Yeah.
Now, did you stay aboard the ship during the repairs, or were you put in billets, or what happened?
Oh no, stayed aboard the ship. Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember because I went on to the communications mess deck, and being the junior, I sat up at the end with the pots and pans and the gas bucket, and just through the hatch there, right next there, was the stoker's mess deck. And there was a dead stoker under, you know, some lockers had been blown over in the explosion. And his neck seemed, the flesh of his, the skin of his neck was stretched. So I suppose the bone was broken. And his head was wedged under one bit and his body was wedged under another bit. And I had to sit there eating my tea looking at him.
And they hadn't got him out.
Because they were still, you know, trying to get the stuff out. That was on their way back, you see.
Did you suffer many casualties in that, or was it?
There were a few, not as, you know, as many. You know, I say the Royal Marines gun crew and some of the stokers on the stokers mess deck up forward. I don't think anybody was. I can't remember anybody being killed on the boys' mess deck because they'd all been sort of accident stations, because most of them were daymen, as we called them. Yeah, they didn't keep watches, so they would have gone straight to their accident stations, wherever it was.
So, did you get ashore at all in Norfolk?
Oh yeah. I had a great friend. He was one of the top engineers, civilian, in the Norfolk Navy Yard, and he used to take me and my pal Taffy out and about, him and his wife, and they had a friend. She was a nurse in the Naval Hospital, and remember they had a little boy, about 4 or 5 years old, but he couldn't get over the construction of our ship. Because I always remember it, in the next dry dock to us was the United States aircraft carrier Hornet. She'd just been built. Now, she was built of half-inch mild steel, which is the same as we built destroyers. And, I mean, we had 6-inch armour plate round the engine room. I think it was 8-inch armoured deckhead over the main wireless office. 4-inch armoured deckhead over the main two wireless transmitting rooms. 4-inch armoured flight deck between the lift wheels, and he said he absolutely praised he couldn't get over it. And I always remember one occasion.
So they didn't have this armour.
No, as I say, this that was Hornet was their latest car. It was 1/2-inch mild steel that we built a destroyer. But they had a rather hard attitude. Their idea was, if she can't fly for aircraft, she's no good to us. Whereas the carrier, the Formidable, like the Illustrious, Victorious, Formidable, with all these guns on, it was laid down that if they didn't operate as a carrier, they could take part as an anti-aircraft cruiser, because they had the anti-aircraft guns. Now, I remember one incident. They fitted 30 Oerlikons on while I was in the States, because they got wise then to all these air attacks, you see. And the Yanks started putting them on theirs because their ships had nothing but anti-aircraft stuff on. And because they were having to run cables throughout the ship, firing control circuits. And this typical American came into number one transmitter room where Bob Sellers was the petty officer to Legolas in charge there, and it was my sort of cleaning station. He was one of my mentors. And this typical American came in with his yellow hat on, a big cigar, and the biggest driller you've ever seen in your life. And he had a mate with him, and these big drills, and he started drilling a hole in the deckhead to run a gland through. And next morning we go in there, and the deck is littered with drills, all colours of the rainbow, poo, blue, pink, green. And this American with his cigar still in his mouth said to Bob, he said, "Jesus," he said, "how long is it going to take me to get through this?" And old Bob picked up a 12-inch ruler off the desk, stuck it in there, so it was 2 inches. He said, "how long have you been doing it now?" He said, "24 hours. He said, "another 24 hours will do it." It took about 2 days to get through this 4 inches of armoured steel.
And when you went ashore, I mean, how did you get on with the Americans? I mean, you mentioned this family.
There was lots of trouble.
Oh, right. Who with? Generally the civilians or Navy or the regulars? Or
Virginia was a very big base for the Army. And you had the Navy there, because it was a big naval base. You had the Navy there. And the American Army used to fight the Marines. The Marines used to fight the Sabres. The Sabres used to fight the Army. And they all used to have a go at us. I mean, I found the attitude of the Americans, it seemed to me they had an inferiority complex. I had to be fighting someone to prove something all the time. And the worrying thing was some of them carried guns. Because we come back offshore one night, and there was the town to the Norfolk Navy Yard in Portsmouth, I suppose for about a mile you walk through a lot of marshy area and a lonely road. And my pal and I were coming back one night, and these two American sailors come up and started being a bit abusive. And this one suddenly pulled out a 4-5 automatic and waving it around, which was a bit frightening. But they always seemed to want to fight someone all the time. I found this changed after Korea.
So you, as far as you were concerned, they were causing the trouble?
Yeah, they used to.
So how would a fight start in a bar? Or were you going to bars by then?
Well, I used to go into a place which was a soda bar and grill. Because the funny thing was, I used to eat whacking great banana splits and everything else. I broke out in boils because I was so unused to the rich food. I used to have occasional beer, but because my money then you couldn't afford it.
So how would a fight start with you? Or were you not actually in them much personally?
I came out the grill one day and we just stood there, and me and my mate, we had our back to the window. And these six American sailors got to start being abusive and limey so-and-sos and all this sort of thing. And when we didn't back down, I thought, here we go, we're going to go. I could see us going back through this plate glass window, there were six of them. But when we didn't back down and we said, well, come on then, let's have you, that sort of thing, they went off. But there were a lot of fights. In actual fact, you couldn't use bathrooms and toilets on ship and then dry dock anywhere, because I mean it goes into the bottom of the dry dock. So although you were still living on the ship, you went ashore for your ablutions and toilets and that sort of thing. And there was one of our Marines was sat on the toilet ashore, and a load of American Marines come in and nearly kicked him to death, beat him up, smashed him while he was still sitting on the toilet. And the pride of the Marines was such that the officer in charge of the Marines really got all Royal Marines were on duty, relieved off duty, sent his entire contingent ashore, and they went ashore there and they beat the hell out of the Yankee Marines. And because we had this degaussing cable, which was about an inch in diameter round, were lead outside and lots of copper wires inside, and they had chunks of this, and the Marines went ashore and used these as bludgeons, and I think they killed one American Marine. There's a big to-do about it, but it turned out that it all started by the Marines. But